Today is Thursday, March 28th, 2024. My name is Alexis Brignoni, aka Briggs, and I'm accompanied by my co-host, the digital forensics SQLiter per excellence, the one that reminds me to put on the face smoother function before the show, the only one that sets up meetings that could not have been an email, the one and only Heather Charpentier. The music is Higher Up by Shane Ivers and can be found at silvermansound.com. Heather, thank you. Thank you for reminding me to smooth out my wrinkles before the show.
Hey, the platform has a face smoother. You need to use it.
I'm in denial. I'm like the river. I'm in denial.
We're not in our 20s anymore.
Oh, Heather, how good to see you. What's going on?
Oh, good to see you too. Nothing. Been a busy 2 weeks. Was off all last week, as you know, because you were off as well, to work on the IASIS material. So a full week of that. That's what I've been up to the last 2 weeks.
Well, we've been up to.
And for
folks that might be listening for the first time, we will be teaching the Advanced Mobile Forensics course for IASIS. It's coming up real soon in Orlando, so come down to my neighborhood to get this class. And we're going to be there. It's going to be really interesting. We're going to have a whole bunch of good topics for you. Johan is online all the way from Europe. Thank you for staying up this late with us or being up that early. It depends. Yeah, it depends what time is there. And obviously, Kevin, my right-hand man person with all my projects, is up in the chat as well. So good seeing you. Yeah, so we've been doing that, and we had a pretty busy, 48 to 24 hours. And I say we, but I think the community in general, if you're one of those examiners like us, that we try to go beyond just, pressing and dumping and pumping reports out, you need to be aware of a few things, right? So what do you say, Heather? We could get on with it?
Let's do it.
All right, let's go.
So first topic of the night, there was an article by Adam Furman of MSAB, and he was discussing a new update with Apple, which came with iOS 17.4. So SQLite databases are part of an iTunes backup. And starting in 17.4, we now have access to the shim, the shared memory, and the wall files that go along with SQLite databases. So excellent news for the community, right? We have access to possible additional deleted data, data that hadn't been committed to the database yet. And his blog, if you go out to, let me put his website up, has a bunch of comparisons that show the additional data that's being recovered from the iTunes backup type extractions, now that we have access to the wall file and the shim file. So make sure you check out his blog and the new data you'll be able to have access to.
Yeah, and I didn't get to read the article when it came out, but obviously Heather and some of the folks kind of talked to me about it. And at first go, you're thinking, well, that's a pretty cool thing, right? Because if it has the wall file now, you get more stuff, like Heather said. And again, for those that are not familiar, those are temporary files that SQLite utilizes to, as data's coming in and out of the database. And so it's there, right? So I'm like, well, that's nice. I didn't think too much of it, right? Until 48 hours, 24 hours. Well, I say 48. It was 48 hours, right? Ago.
Yeah.
Chan chan chan. So the great Ian Whiffen, and if you don't know who Ian Whiffen, you should, although most likely you know who he is. Mm-hmm. He is the main head cheese at Cellebrite. He deals with all the decoding teams there, kind of the boss there for those. And he came out with a post in the Cellebrite portal for the customers, and really important information. So again, I'm gonna get to it. So we know that 17.4. That iOS version does include these WAV files. Well, what's happening is that now these WAV files are appearing, and as they're appearing, depending on how you're doing that extraction, And I'll explain that in a second. You might be getting copies of that main database, two copies of it. So instead of getting the database and the WAV file, you're getting a database again, and then a WAV file. And that's breaking our tools, okay? And the reason you're like, well, why are we getting those two? That's how Apple decided to pull those out from that particular iOS version. Now, remember, our tools don't just drop things into your file system. It just doesn't do that, right? What our tools do is put them in a container, right, Heather? And usually that container, yeah, based on practice, tends to be what? A zip file. That's kind of like, and I mean, even Celebrite had tried to use DAR files and some other formats, but based on reasons that we can discuss another day, the zip file has become the de facto standard as a container for this data that's coming out of these mobile devices. Okay, fine. Well, the problem is when you pull out these two databases are coming out of the extraction, or, you know, the phone is giving them to you. If they land on the file system, you're putting two files with the same name in the same location. Is that possible? Of course not. So what the computer does is what? Puts one in, overwrites the other one. And you're like, okay, well, you don't notice it, right? But zip files don't work that way. If you send a file to a container, zip container, and send another file to the same location path, right, with that same name, the zip is going to hold it. The zip file doesn't care. It doesn't say, hey, look, are you sure you want to put these two files with the same path? The zip file doesn't care at all. They just keep track of the path of the file name altogether. So when tools like, and I say Celebrite because they were the ones that gave that notice, but our assumption, we haven't tested it yet, but our assumption is that this could happen with pretty much any forensic tool. The tool then has to make a decision. First of all, I have these two files. Am I going to take them or not? Right. And if I do, there's a problem because if it takes one of them, they're not the same. Those two databases that come out, they're not the same. One goes with the WAV file. And the other one, Ian tells us, based on his research, is that same database with the WAV file already committed, which means all that data is in or out, and it doesn't have a WAV file. So what happens if the system decides to pick the one that has it committed? The WAV file is still there. It will try to apply that WAV file, say, okay, let's replay these events here. And it's going to choke because those events already happened, right?
Right.
And SQLite is not designed to work that way. And I don't know. And I know it's a lot of technical explanation for folks that might be listening and even seeing, because I don't have any props. Right. I'm just talking about what I know and what we know based on what Ian researched and shared with the community. But this is the main point. After all this, and there's more to say, but the main point is this, right? If you take your advanced logical extraction from iOS 17.4.1, right? And you just put it through your tooling, whatever tool it is, and you don't care about it, and you pass it on, you're going to miss chats. Because chats usually, not always, but usually are located in what? In SQLite files. SQLite databases, right? And that's a serious problem. Because you will, the tool will make notice of that in some log, I guess, but you might not even notice. And that comes back to what we talked about last episode about how I believe tools should be more, let me rephrase that. Tools should make us more aware of where something breaks instead of having me dig to a log to find it. And that's a discussion we had last episode, if everybody's interested. But that's how it is, right? And that could be a big problem. What have you seen in regards to the topic, Heather?
So definitely props to Ian for putting that out in the community portal. Hopefully everybody got an email if you didn't go into the community portal and check out that announcement. Because included in it are a couple of workarounds, which we'll discuss in a second. But I extracted one of my test phones, Advanced Logical 17.4.1, and brought it in and checked it out. And there's definitely issues with my Advanced Logical. I am missing data. Some of the databases look to be empty, but they're not. So using one of the workarounds that Ian provided, I was able to compare the two, and you can see the data using the workaround. And then, of course, in just the regular Advanced Logical, I'm missing that data.
Yeah, and again, if you're not, let me say this, if you're not kind of part of the community, like come to the show here or follow folks in LinkedIn or you're up and up on your listserv or on your emails from the vendors, you're going to miss this data. So
if
those that are listening, reach out to other, colleagues from your agencies or, you know, people that you know, and make sure the word spreads out. Obviously, the companies are working on it. Well, let me rephrase that. I know Cellebrite is. They told us, and they do it, right? But that's a little bit of a tiny little comment here. I haven't heard about this from any other vendors. And some folks, I mean, I'm not going to say who they are, but some folks from the other side of the world has told me that they're finding this issue in other tools, not in Cellebrite tools, in tools from other vendors. So just because you're like, well, I don't do my logical extractions with Cellebrite. I use company W. You might still be susceptible to that. And the reason for that is that depending on how the company makes those logicals, you might be exposed to this. And you got to remember, folks need to be aware that most, iTunes style backups, AFC dumps and all that, they're done through DLLs that Apple owns. Does that make sense? So, different companies for that particular purposes, they're going to use the same DLLs that Apple provides and say, tell the phone, hey, phone, provide me these things, run these processes. And those processes will run. Now, what will the company do with that, right? So that's why I'm saying that this problem might be, I'm pretty sure. I'm not 100% sure. I haven't tested it, but I'm making a really good informed guess that other companies might be having this issue. And again, full file systems, will they be susceptible? I don't know. It depends what their secret sauce is. But if their secret sauce includes some of these processes that Apple, has for their phones, it might be susceptible. So you have to always try to check out when you see these things that your product is not being susceptible for it. And if it is, then like Heather's saying, you need to think about how can we get the job done till the tools catch up with a, I'm not going to say fix, nothing is broken. It's just that something changed, right? So how are they going to update themselves to accommodate this new change in our, working space?
Exactly. So Ian talked about a couple of workarounds. I have one here. Let's see. So the first workaround he talks about is to locate the zip file created as part of the extraction process and then using a tool such as 7-Zip, extract the zip file to your computer and then extract, or you could extract just the backup service folder. And then if you're prompted to overwrite the files, which you see here in the screen, it's asking if you stating that the destination folder already contains these files, do you want to replace the existing file? You would hit the yes. So overwrite the files. And then from within PA, you open that unzipped folder as an iTunes backup. So just using the folder option.
Yeah, and I mean, it kind of makes sense. It makes sense in, like I described previously, right? If you dump the files to the file system, which is what this is doing, if you uncompress the zip file, you're dumping on the file system. The file system through zip will have to make a decision because you're going to have both files in the same place, the same path. And then you overwrite one and keep the other one. And obviously on Ian's testing, the one that remains is the one that matches the while, and then you're good to go. Right. But what problems could you foresee with that type of approach, Heather?
Yeah, so definitely changes. There'll be changes made to your extraction. You're not verifying the hash to the original hash that came out with the extraction. And Ian even has in bold in his announcement to the community to please note that this solution involves removing the committed versions of the duplicated databases from the extraction. Any steps taken should be undertaken with due care and consideration, and you must be well documented. So I think the documentation is key here. You're still going to have your original extraction, your original data, but documenting any changes you may have to make to be able to view the data in the tools.
Yeah, and that speaks to the larger point that we need to make our stakeholders aware. What makes something forensic is not just because I use a forensically, a tool that's been imbued with forensicality. like something being forensic is not a property a property of water is wet. A property of Cellebrite is that it's forensic. Like, that's not a thing, right? Forensic is not a property. What forensic means is that you're able to document the steps you took to be able to what?
Recreate it.
Recreate it or replicate yep. it. Both right. words are perfect, right? So that's what forensic is, right? Mm-hmm. You have to do the steps to get to this data. Of course, there's preferable steps, right? I'd rather not have to open the container, right? If I can avoid it. But yes. if it's unavoidable, then we have to do it, right?
Yeah. So there's a workaround too as well. Did you want to explain that one?
Yeah. So okay. so the second workaround is you take Insights PA, which is the new branding name for the tooling for that mm-hmm. Cellebrite provides, and you process the thing. Now you go to one of the, I think it's the file info tab, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Correct.
And then you can look at different files that might be of issue here, and take note of those. After you take note of those, you can then go open the using 7-Zip. You have to use 7-Zip to do it. You don't do it through yes. the Windows SIP management thing. That's not going to work. You take 7-Zip, you go in, and you flag those files, and you take them, delete them from your SIP, and then save that SIP. Now that SIP doesn't have those files, and then you process them. You process it, and then you're good to go. Of course, like Heather said, a big problem in regards to that, I say big problem, but a problem in regards to hashes won't match, right?
Right.
And, I'm on a roll, so I'm going to go. one more thing. What I'm doing is an approach of both, right? I'm saying that because the whole dump everything to the computer and then parse it, I don't like it because true, the databases will be there. The main metadata for the chats, if it's a chat, that's a database for chats, it's going to be within the database. So that doesn't get affected. Now, the metadata for the database itself, that outer shell of the database, does change, right? The creation date is now going to be the date the thing was uncompressed, right? And Heather, right. jump at me if I say something badly explained.
You're good.
All right. And then that's not an issue. But what happens with possible multimedia files that come out of that media, right? And maybe the tool, not always, but maybe the tool depends on some of that metadata that comes with the file itself or some EXIF data. And again, I'm not saying that's the case at all times. Remember, there's manifest lists and there are different things that have the metadata somewhere else. I get it. But I don't want to run that risk. So I rather, what I do is I take the SIP file, I dump it, right? I uncompress it and then parse only for the chats. That's it. Mm-hmm. Then I take the original SIP file, parse it again for everything else, okay, without changing anything else. Just for the everything else. So at least I kind of minimize the scope of what could be, quote unquote, an issue here. My second report, all the hashes will match because I'm not changing that SIP file. But I'm using it only for the specific purpose of everything but the databases. And then for the other other report that I make out of it, just for the chats, then I can just speak to those. So does that make sense? So I'm trying to take the scope of issues and minimizing it as much as I can, if that makes sense.
It does. It makes sense. I have to pop your comment up here, though.
Savi is my kid. He's saying hi, Dad, in Spanish. Hi, Savi. they're watching.
That is so cute.
It is. It's my 8-year-old. The cutest thing. You wouldn't believe it came out. That came out of me. He's so beautiful. So smart. a quick side note here, real quick. I see all the folks coming in into Instagram. So thank you also for all of you for showing up. We see you. All right. One more thing. This is important, right? So these type of things, when they happen, you need to be aware. I had in my LinkedIn, a couple of people told me, hey, look, we read your post and we went back and two of our cases had that issue and they didn't notice. Yeah. Wow. So just check out the post when you can.
Awesome.
And they mentioned it. So they came across it. So please. While this is getting fixed, make sure that those advanced logicals are being properly parsed and give your full file systems an extra look. And it don't matter if you're not using Cellebrite tools, okay?
Right.
Now, this is the last thing I'm going to say on this topic, which is important. We said in this show a lot of times, we're not shields for any company. We're also not haters of any company. And I've gave some constructive criticism to Cellebrite in the past, but now today I'm here to give him a lot of credit, right? Mm-hmm. And it's how it goes, right? We try to call it as we see it. Now, Cellebrite took the step of actually sending out somebody of Ian's caliber to make sure the community is aware. They came out with workarounds. Not only that, they're working on a white paper that will be coming out soon about the issues, because that's necessary, right? If I need to go to court and explain why there's some issue with hashes with this particular extractions, we have the backing now with that white paper, extra backing of what's going on, right?
Right.
Because you have, you know, that documentation with you, plus your own knowledge, expertise, and your own notes. And that's something that I want to see companies continue to do and do more, okay? That it talks about that transparency that we talked about last episode that we want from our vendors. It also talks about the integrity of the work they do. And they could have hit in the ball, right? They could have said, well, you know, let's fix this real quick and maybe nobody will notice.
Yeah. Which, I'm glad they didn't.
Exactly. Which I've seen this happening in the past with other companies.
Yeah.
Right? So I give them credit for that. Can you share Kevin's comment there?
I can.
And Kevin, I mean, that being said, Kevin is totally correct. Kevin is saying that he wishes the post was public and not behind a login for customers, right? And of course, there's always space to be better. That maybe make another type of notification. I think they send out emails too, but again, emails goes mostly to customers, right? People right. that are in that list. So, but hey, I give them a lot of credit just for being able to put that out there at the speed they did it. And that's how we're here. We took that and we try to also make it known to the community. And now you that are listening or watching, then kind of also let other people know. So good stuff.
I agree with Kevin, because sometimes there's like one person in charge of like managing all of the dongles and stuff. So they have the login and they get the email. And if they don't share it with everybody that works for them, you may have a lot of people that miss the notification. So that's actually a good point.
I'm gonna leave it like that. I'm not gonna throw nobody under the bus. But if you're one of those persons, make sure you put out, like, that person that's responsible for it, make sure to put it out, send an email out. Might be like, well, I saw it on the Cellebrite portal. I sent many. Everybody must know. No, everybody doesn't know.
No, they do not.
Send an email to your squads, to your troops, to your different units that are far away, and make sure people are aware.
All right. So we have the Universal Forensic Apple Device Extractor next. And I'm going to put the link up for that while Alexis talks about it.
Yeah, so this is some interesting project that I forgot who sent it to me. I'm the worst, but somebody sent me a message saying, "Hey, have you checked this project out?" And I'm be like, "Well, no, I haven't. Let me check it out." And it was actually pretty good. It's Python based, but it has a nice graphical user interface. And it, as of today, it runs only on Linux and Mac. There's some issues with the GUI libraries that Windows doesn't play nice with them, so. For now, that's the case. That being said, keep that in there. That's perfect.
Sure.
I want to make I believe that you want to, if you can, work with your device in the environment that's most similar to it. Okay. For example, we know Androids and iOSs, right? Come from a Unix, Linux background. That code, okay. When you work with an Apple device in a Windows computer, there's nothing wrong with it, but it's not a similar environment. So you got to be careful when you do that, okay? I'd rather do that type of work on a Mac. And obviously forensic tools are kind of gravitating more towards Windows environments. Before, you have a little bit of competition in regards to tools running for Mac for doing forensics and tools running on Windows for forensics. But I think we need to revive that. And that's why my projects, I make the point of making them cross-platform. And I'm going to go off the topic for a second, give you an example, folks that are listening and watching. When you pull out a file for analysis, let's say a media file from an iOS device, the file system that the iOS has is APFS, right? The Apple file system device. Okay, there's metadata contained within that file system. If you move that from your iPhone and drop it on your Windows box, what's going to happen, Heather?
You're going to lose some of that metadata.
You're going to lose it because NTFS, the file system for Windows, or even if you have FAT, whatever, it doesn't, or XFAT, doesn't matter, does not know how to deal with that information because it has no way to accommodate it to its own file system. An example of that is extended attributes in APFS file systems, okay? It's kind of funny because, you know, APFS is Apple file system, so I'm saying file system twice. Apple file system, file system. anyways, I digress. But yeah, I mean, so extended attributes are super important. It tells you a lot about that file, possibly where that file came from, some maybe at the usernames. And like if you're dealing with files that are coming through the Bluetooth technology with AirDrop, right? If you pull that data out and you dump it on a Windows box, you're going to have issues. Another simple example, you want to look at that picture and it's a, I don't know how to pronounce this, it's HAIC or HAIC, I don't know, H-A-I-C extension files, right?
Yep.
If you dump it on a, you drop that file on a Windows box, you'll be like, I don't know what this is.
Not even opening it.
Exactly. But if you put it on a Windows, on a Mac box, you'll be able to actually look at it, right?
Right.
And let me tell you, if you really want to squeeze that case and get all the data, sometimes you might have to pull some files out of your extraction to do some further by hand analysis. So you want to do that within the file system that's more like the system that you're examining, okay? In this case, going back to the tool, all that being said, going back to the tool, this tooling runs on Mac and I love it because it generates not only an extraction, it generates extraction and pulls logs as well. What you see here on screen right now, it's a little bit of the interface. It's a classical kind of Linux interface. Like when you set it up, I love it. It works really well. And when I put my test iOS device, at first it didn't find it, because I needed to make sure to put in the PIN code and make sure it recognized that you could pair it with that computer, okay? This tool will not break your encryptions or nothing like that, right? Well, let me step back. There's some brute forcing capabilities, but that's for a little bit later. you have to have access to your phone. You have to be able to pair with it. And it tells you there all the information about that device. Let's go to the next slide. And then it gives you a menu of options. And this is the meat and potatoes of this program. You can save the device information to text, which you saw in this previous screen. You can do an iTunes-style backup. You can do a Logical Plus backup, which is kind of like that iTunes-style backup with additional information from like phone call logs and stuff like that. Or you can do it UFED style. And UFED, for those who are familiar, again, with Cellebrite Tools, it's the type of the format that UFED for PC gave us when we made our logical or advanced logical extraction we were mentioning a little bit ago. It's kind of funny, right? This has been the advanced logical extraction week. We didn't plan it that way. It just happened.
Still go for your full file system.
Yeah. Well, of course, if you can. And I have a meme for that, right? Whenever there's a new file system, you go and you say, hey, you know, tool, what can you give me? And the best I can give you is advanced logical.
Yep.
Because we don't have support for full file systems yet.
Exactly.
So This is the thing. Full file system is the preferred extraction, but you will not always get it. So there will always be some lag time between the new version of the tool. I'm sorry, the new version of the operating system and a new version of the tool that actually gives you full file system access to it. Mm-hmm. That's just how this game is played.
Yep.
So advanced logicals will still be relevant to your investigations.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And this particular tool gives you that UFED style, which means it has the UFD file there that has all the metadata in it. I don't think I add that to the screen, but that's fine. Let's go to the next slide. So when you run it, I ran the UFED style backup. So it does logical backup, has a nice progress bar. And then after it goes, it does an AFC extraction of media files, which I kind of mentioned previously, like the AFC conduit, pulls those in, and the backup is complete. When the backup is complete, what you're going to get is a nice collection of files, which we'll show in a minute. Another option is to collect unified logs. Heather's going to talk about Unified Logs more in a second, another method. But this method, I found it, as of today, to be the most painless way of getting Unified Logs from a device so far. You literally hit option number 5, collect Unified Logs, you hit OK. It takes some time, you sit there tight, you wait. And then after it's done, you have a nice .log archive with mm-hmm. everything you need there. And again, talking about using like environments to do your analysis, if you dump that log archive into a Windows box, you're dead in the water. There's nothing you can do with it. But if you do it on a Mac, on a Mac OS device, you can then use the Mac OS viewer that comes with Macs and really look at all that data within that log archive, all right? And when the full backup is done, you can feed it, like you can see there on the screen, for example, in this case, to Physical Analyzer, and it works just like any other extraction that you've done. This is great because the cost of this is, it costs as much as our tooling costs, which is zero.
Zero is nice. Yeah. Everybody likes that price.
Yeah. So it, and it works really well. The author is Christian Peters. I believe he's from Germany. And he's adding some other capabilities in regards to doing possibly screenshotting of things within your device. So he didn't give me details. So maybe I'm saying that wrong. Hopefully not. But he's still, the point is, he's working on more developments on the tool. So I'm really happy to see not only decoding things like what I do, but also some extraction things that folks are getting into that space and making it open source. So I'm really happy to see that.
I thought it was cool, too. He wrote this script for his master's thesis. So for his schooling, I just thought that was a cool little detail.
Yeah, I think they should give him the diploma right now.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Why are we waiting to the end of the semester? Give that man his diploma.
Speaking of the Unified Logs, so I tested out a Unified Logs tool this week, too, created by Lionel Notari. And I actually have a link here to his blog. He has a blog about a whole bunch of other topics as well, but the Unified Log is... his first digital forensic tool. He did a LinkedIn post talking about his very first digital forensics tool, which is awesome. The tool allows you to extract the Unified Logs from an iPhone and in a forensically sound manner. You need to run it on a Mac. And then after installing the dependencies that he provides when you request a copy of his tool, there's just a simple command that launches the tool. So I have some pictures of this here. And here is the command. And I screwed it up because I always screw everything up the first time. And I did not put the path in where the script was. And I couldn't figure out what was wrong. So I had to email him. And he was trying to figure out what was wrong. And I figured it out in the meantime, thankfully. But you put in the command, enter your password. And here's when I add the path and get it right.
Look. I made code to open thousands upon thousands of files, right? And every time I need to open a file in Python, I had to be like, what's the with open command again? How is the full command again? And I had to Google it every single time, even though I've done it 1,000 times. So don't feel bad about it.
I like to share the things I screw up because it happens on a daily basis. So I don't know. Hopefully there's others like me, I guess.
I mean, there is. And we'll talk about more of that in the end part of the show.
So it opens up this nice interface and hook the phone to the Mac, enter whether it's locked or not, who's performing the extraction. So it gives you a chance to put your name in, the name of the device, what you want to name the log archive file, where you want to put it. And then you just click this initiating log collection at the bottom. And there's my information. And you end up with whatever you named the log archive. And again, you can view it with Mac's internal console to view it. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really easy to use, was super quick and really cool and awesome to Lionel for his first digital forensics tool.
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, we went from having to jump 20 hoops to get this log archive out of iPhones. And now we have two tools to do this type of work. A slight critique that I'll give is that his code, it's encrypted. And he said that it's because it's not done yet. And again, he doesn't have to explain us why he did that, because he wants to, right? Maybe he wants to protect intellectual property, and that's fine. I'm not against it. But my smallest critique is just, it's a personal preference. I like to see that code if possible, and to learn from it, and also to validate some of that stuff. It makes it easier, but it's not a necessity. It's more of a personal preference. So, you have to, like Heather was showing in the screenshot, you have to make sure that you use the encrypting, decrypting libraries before you execute the program, or it's not gonna work because of that function, issue. But that's not an issue, just because that's how we decided to do it. But nothing wrong with it. It's just my personal preference is that hopefully it would be open source, but people make choices, and we respect those choices.
What do we have? All right.
All right, so
you're
it's
up.
It's up for my. Although I talk a lot so much this show, right? So next show will be your time to rant. But
I ranted last time.
That's true. So I'm not ranting today, but I will say a lot of things that are in our minds, right? So I've been thinking about a few days to the concept of building brands, right? And when I say that, I mean it in the context of digital forensics. We're familiar with personal brands, right? We know that, obscure family of a lawyer, the wife and daughters, they became influencers and are really famous people, right? We know who those are the Kardashians, right? So when we think about branding and influencer, we think about them, right? And obviously, I'm not saying you should be or think about being the Kardashians of the digital forensics world. I don't think we want to see that either. But
no, please don't.
I think there is value in having that kind of like a personal brand, right? In regards to the things that you do and the things that you care about. So I want to spend some time today, maybe all the way to the end of the show, pretty much, discussing why we believe this is important. And how can we get to it, right? And the first part I wanted to mention about is why is this important, right? And I was thinking about how you spend so much time, let's say, at your workplace, developing a good reputation or being a hard worker or being known for the work that you do, right? And if all of a sudden something changes, if you're laid off, if you move to another unit, if you have to move across the country to get another job or whatever it is, you're starting again, building that credibility from scratch. All right. And that's usually how it happens. You find yourself having to prove yourself constantly. And there's nothing wrong with that in a sense. But I believe that if you have a brand, that having to prove yourself is less because you are a known quantity where you go. When you have a personal brand, I believe, is portable. Okay. You can take from one place to another place to another place because it precedes you as well as it follows you. Okay. Having a personal brand, I also believe that shows that you're resilient, that you're adaptable, that you're up to date. And that's something that's really important, especially if you're coming new into this space. You need to build a brand to show that you're malleable, that you can learn, that you are keeping up with the conversations that are happening within the community. And these conversations are conversations, kind of cutting edge conversations. What's the latest things that are happening? Okay. Having a personal brand makes you visible. And when you have visibility within the community and your workspace, that leads to opportunities. And those opportunities need to lead to new responsibilities. And those responsibilities hopefully also lead to more pay. I mean, there's nothing wrong with getting more pay, right?
No, nothing at all.
And, neither Heather and myself are motivated strictly by pay, but pay is important.
Yeah.
All right, so the idea is, so how do we build a brand, right? And you might say, well, what credibility do you have about building a brand? Look, I've been doing this for over a decade in regards to the digital forensic stuff, and I've been doing law enforcement for, in September, it will be 17 years, okay? And even before that, I was doing computers as an assistant administrator and all sorts of things. So that if I add that time, it will be about 23, 20, almost 25 years of experience in IT related things. Okay. And throughout those years, I tried to kind of share with the community, and that led with me noticing it to kind of having a little bit of a platform that has served me well and has served others well. Right. So that's why I think I could speak on, we can both speak on the topic. And Heather, I didn't tell this Heather before the show. So, but no, whatever, I'll say it. I knew of Heather before she even knew of me. Okay. Because Heather was super active, and she had her own brand within the ISIS listserv. Everybody knew that when Heather asked a question in the listserv, it's going to be a really incisive question, right? Everybody knew that when Heather gave an answer, it would be an answer to the actual question. Okay. So when I met Heather last year in person for the first time, when we taught the basic mobile device course in ISIS, I knew who she was before she knew me, right? And that led to us coming together and doing the show, among other things that we do together, right, in the forensic space. So you build that brand, and you will get that, and people knowing you and bringing you into things because you have that brand, and you build it, right? And before I get into the steps, I want to say one more thing. You build that brand not only through the internet and social media. You build it with your workers. You build it with your bosses. You build it with the folks that you interact outside of your organization. In my case, I have to build that brand with my prosecutors, right? That to make sure they understand the work that I do, where I specialize on, and what the quality of my product, right? And that spreads around. And you build that brand within your workspace, okay? And that's super important if you want to be successful and happy at your job, all right? So did I tell you that before, that I knew you from the ISIS? I told you before that, right?
I think I knew of you, though. Everybody knew of you.
it's the branding. and also me being annoying as F. So. Yeah. So how do you do this, right? How are you like Heather, that I knew about her before she knew that I knew about her, and vice versa, right? She knew about me for being annoying, right? So how do you create that? Well, the first thing is to think about what is unique about you, right? And that doesn't mean that, well, I discovered how to parse JSON. I was the first person in the universe to do a SQLite query. Like, you don't have to be that person.
Right.
The uniqueness doesn't mean that you have to be the first person or the only person to do X, all right? The fact of the matter is that you're unique for being you, because there's nobody else like you. And there will never be anybody else like you. And in my case, thank goodness. you bring your experiences, you bring your life. I mentioned how I came from a coding background. And what's my uniqueness? I believe I come from that coding background, and I came in, I discovered that I like mobile forensics a lot. And I said, well, how can I, also necessity, right? How can I make these things better? And I took what I liked from mobile forensics and forensics in general, added it with my coding. And that's where the Leap project came to be, which again has opened opportunities that I never imagined that would happen. And the project's being used worldwide, right? So how do you do that, right? How to bring those people? Not a lot of people know. I mentioned this like 3 or 4 years in a interview with Jessica Hyde, in the Magnet Podcast. Before I became an examiner and a computer person, I was a seminarian, and I know that's hard to believe.
I didn't believe it when you told me.
I was 6 months away from finishing seminary school.
still can't believe it.
But I bring those experiences too, right? That right. Love of helping people, of making the world better, of preaching in a sense, with my rants. see a couple of people in the chat saying, what?
I agree with Mary and Lori. What? It's exactly my response. I had no idea.
The chat is going crazy now saying, what? What? I used to preach. Yeah. Like professionally. Now I do computers professionally. But you bring those experiences to your workplace, and because you're a field human being, right? I mean, that mm-hmm. uniqueness, Heather, what do you think?
Yeah. So I think there's unique qualities about each and every person in this field. Everyone has something to offer. A lot of times I have trouble figuring out what sets me apart and what's unique about me. And then, of course, I come here every 2 weeks and Alexis does his intro for me. And I'm like, oh, is that it? But even if you don't see in yourself, what's unique about you, other people are going to see it. And they'll point that out to you, which has been done for me. I mean, definitely.
Look, you're so unique that I know that we could do this show for the next 20 years and I will always have something new to say every show about you, like guaranteed.
Well, thank you.
I want to share this thought from Brett. Brett says, he might not be a seminarian, but he prays during every acquisition.
I think we might all do that. We all join you.
Even if you're an unbeliever like I am now, you will still, just in case, maybe let a few candles too on the way. Yeah, we want that thing too. We want those hashes to match. Please, universe, make the hashes match. Yeah. So you bring uniqueness, right? We bring that to the table, right? And that uniqueness needs to be framed. And with that, I think it needs to be framed within what are your values, okay? And values, and this is something that I kind of thought about throughout the years and read some books that are on the topic. Values are the things that you value. Obviously, it's a value, but it's what gives you purpose. That's what I've said. It's what gives you purpose. Why are you doing what you're doing, right? And these things are important, right? Some people, is money important? For some folks, it is. It might be really, really important to have money. And there's nothing wrong with it. You know, if money allows us to do other things, and there's nothing wrong with that. But it might not be money. It might be something else, right? Or maybe not only money, might be one of those. So what other things other than money? Because this is work. That's why I mentioned money first. We're not going to do this for free. We need certain things, right? The pyramid of needs, right? We need food. We need shelter. We need clothes. We need health. And what else? And some other basic necessities, right? So we need those. But what are your values, right? I value justice, right? That's why I'm in this field, in the law enforcement field. I value service. I value the fact that I came to this planet and that hopefully when I leave it, I will leave it at least a tiny bit better than how I found it. Okay. And, I value curiosity and I value, the truth, right? And this is different from beliefs, because when we talk about beliefs, we're talking about the things that you think are true. And it's okay to base your value and beliefs, right? Because you're not going to base it on things you think are false, right? But the thing with beliefs and values, this is an important difference, because belief is what you believe is true, but values should inform your beliefs. If you base your value only on beliefs, anything that comes into conflict with your beliefs will be a threat. Because if something comes in contact with your beliefs that's contrary to what you believe in, you run the risk of being wrong. And nobody wants to be wrong, right? but if I value truth, well, guess what? I will take that value, and that value informs my belief, and I will change my belief. And I say that because the conversation in our circle says, well, you're examiners, you need to be unbiased and impartial. And we constantly declare ourselves to be unbiased, and that's ridiculous, right? The fact that you're saying that you're unbiased, it's in itself a bias. I mean, come on, man. Right? It's like you cannot declare yourself unbiased or impartial, because when you declare it, you're obviously not, right? I think the conversation should be to move more into the value sphere. What do you value? I value truth. I value justice. I value honesty. I value the correctness of the evidence. And those values will inform my beliefs. If I might be believing this person is guilty, but as truth comes, I will change that belief, right? We have a scientific method within our science, right? Our digital forensics field that guarantees that our values shine through and our beliefs are accommodated to the facts of the case, the facts of the planet, of life, of the universe. And this is important. We all bias in certain ways, in certain things. We're human, it's there. But we value something beyond that, beyond what we believe at the moment. We value being and understanding what the truth is, no matter the cost. So that's why I'm not afraid in looking at an exam and coming across a piece of data that contradicts the theory of the case. And I have no fear, I feel nothing bad about bringing that up. Simple as that, because I'm not here to confirm your beliefs. I'm here to express those values, to make our beliefs change as needed, right? Does that make sense, Heather?
That does make sense. So I'm wrong often, but you're completely right. I need to be wrong to get to that right answer when I'm working through a case. I think just don't be afraid of being wrong. Open yourself up. That'll open you up to learning more.
I definitely agree. When you're new, I guess when we get old in this field of 10, 20 years, we forget that beginner's mentality, right? I'm a black belt now. I know all there is to know about the digital forensics kung fu. And we forget that beginner's mentality when you have to commit so many mistakes to get to the right place you need to be. And that's how learning happens. You have to have that beginner's mentality at all times. You need to always be a white belt, even if you have 20 black belts in this field, right? And again, I'm not saying that you go into court and say, well, I am totally biased. I'm here and I'm not impartial at all, right? I'm not saying that, right? you are biased to truth. You are partial to the reality. You're partial to the facts. That's what you're partial to, right? Those are your values, right? So that's what I'm saying. If you're biased, everybody's biased. But if there's a bias that I want to really underline, is the value of truth. That's what I'm biased towards. I'm biased towards the facts. And that I feel comfortable saying every day at any time of the week, because that's what I value and I strive. And our science guarantees it. The digital forensic process guarantees that those values shine through if you let it. Because if you don't, and I'm not going to say any specifics, but we know cases where folks are so tied to their beliefs that even when the evidence shows, for example, that the person is innocent, they persist that they're guilty. And you're like, come on, are you not seeing this? And I was reading a book. I'm sorry, quick, took tangent. Folks, stay with us 10 or 15 minutes after the hour because I wanna stress these points. I was reading a book by Adam Grant called Rethink or Think Again. I think it's Think Again. He was mentioning in some studies where folks that lost their eyesight, right? And they to themselves believe they were not blind. They were like, oh no, the room is too dark. We need to kind of turn the lights on more. Or no, I don't have my glasses. It's not that the lights were off. They were blind. They lost their vision. If you had to punch them in the face, they wouldn't flinch, right? But they did not want to accept those facts because it contradicted that is those internal beliefs. And some of those persons did have some, brain development that has some issues with that, right? And that, that's the case. But sometimes we could be like that, right? We could be blind and not want to accept that we are, right? So we need to constantly focus on values and then let the beliefs, change as they need to, right? So that's the second part. You have to leave your value. You have to know what your values are, because when you know your values, then you can actually act upon them and contribute, which is the third step. You need to have contribution. So in order to build your brand, let me just kind of, again, recap that. You have to recognize that you're unique and what makes you unique. You got to recognize what your values are and put those into actions and then put in front what are your contributions, okay? What are you doing with your values that makes you unique, right? And, are you sharing those contributions? And I understand you can't go and say, well, yeah, we just solved this triple murder case and give all the details of the case. And we're going to trial next week. Like, you cannot do that. But what you can do is say, look, I there's these artifacts or this is things I've been researching. Or look, even if you're a beginner, something as simple as taking an article that somebody put out and making comments on it is enough. Like I said, I knew Heather from her contributions on the listserv. And I don't think she was doing it to get recognition. No. I know she didn't do it to get recognition because I know her pretty well by now. But that's a byproduct of it. You get that recognition. You build that brand. Not because you're so much trying to build it. It's because you're actually sharing your contributions. It could be as simple as that. Participating with an article. My first big contribution, at least that falls to my mind, was with Discord. I had a case that was helping the locals with an individual that had coerced a minor to travel with him that they met through Discord. And nobody knew Discord, what it was. Like, had no idea what it is, right? And I started looking at it and, let's be real here. To contribute, you do not need to be an expert. You do not. When I started working on that Discord, Did I went and consulted with the Discord expert to make sure I was right? Could I have done that? There was no Discord expert. Nobody knew what Discord was. It's a new app. The expert didn't exist. What, am I going to sit there and just wait till the Discord expert shows up? Well, guess what? let me tell this to folks real clear. You do not declare yourself to be an expert. Does that make sense? Like, being an expert is not something you declare. It's something that is said by others. It's something that somebody imbues upon another or upon yourself. You don't declare yourself an expert. What you do is you put the knowledge out. You put what you learned out, right? And guess what? With enough time, enough, you know, going through that process, learning about making contributions in a particular field, you will become an expert even if you're not looking for it. Does that make sense? You don't say, well, I'm an expert now. You will never know that you're an expert. People will tell you that you are, and you say, thank you. But what you do is you keep on trucking. You keep on contributing. You keep on sharing what you know. And well, when I become an expert, you will never become an expert. That's not something that you declare upon yourself. Does that make sense, Heather?
Yeah, it does. I would say always share what you find, even if you feel that people in the field already know it. Maybe a majority of the people who see whatever you're sharing will already know it, but you will be helping somebody. There'll always be a handful of people that come across your research, your posts, your comments that didn't know what you're putting out there. And then you have contributed and your influence will grow.
Oh, absolutely. And look, like Heather's saying, put that what Heather said, what we said at the beginning, right? You're unique. Your perspective of whatever it is will help others that might have the same thought process as you, right? And I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we mentioned how Ian came out with a notification about what's going on with the Advanced Logicals. I did a post on LinkedIn, obviously referencing him, how I viewed or my synopsis of it and my steps on how I took his workarounds, how I do use them for myself, right? And that's my point of view. And a few people were able to write and say, hey, you know, we appreciate that. That really helped us, you know, drive it home. You can, I mean, if I do it, anybody can do it. You remember those old Geico commercials? You know, was it Geico or is it Geico? But you know, like a caveman could do it or something like that. Some caveman. It's an old commercial. Well, you don't watch TV. That's better.
That's right.
Yeah, not watching TV actually makes you smarter. Anyways,
did you expect me to know that?
I should ask you about quantum physics. That's more likely that to happen. but yeah, I mean, that, like a caveman couldn't do it, right? If I can do it, a caveman could do it, right? So you do that, dude. Add your voice, right? Put that contributions out there, right?
Yeah.
You have to also find people. Find people. Like, I've been lucky enough to find good people within this field, right? To talk about the things that we like, that we have shared interests, that keep me real. That they tell me, hey, Briggs, you're full of emoji poop on this thing, or you're wrong, because obviously, that really polish my ideas or add their ideas to mine, and we grow together, right? And I got folks that we have a conversation within Discord or conversation within some other chatting applications. People that we started as plain interested in the field, we became colleagues, and eventually we became really good friends. I'm looking at you, Heather. Right? Build your tribe, right? When you do that, and it's, when you're in, it's your part of this, be part of the community, right? Take those contributions and find people that are like-minded in those fields, because it will build your brand, but be more important than the brand at that point. It makes you a better human being, right? And, you know, don't get red, but it's true. I'm a better human being having met Heather, right? And hopefully you can do that as well.
I'm looking right back at you. So since we started our friendship, I have learned so much more than I thought I ever would. But it's, you're teaching me things, but not necessarily always teaching me things, just pushing me to learn things on my own. So with that tribe, you'll get that extra push and the positive reinforcement from people in the community that will just make you a better digital forensic analyst or whatever your position is. And it'll just make you better at your craft.
Look, when I push you out of the nest, it's because I know you can fly. So don't you worry. If you don't fly, you'll at least glide. You'll be fine.
Thanks.
Look, and the last step, right? As you have making those contributions, create that content, right? Make it digestible for others, and make people know that you have content out. And it's the typical, like I think it's Chinese or Japanese koan or thought process is, if a tree falls in the forest, right, and there's nobody to hear that it fell, they didn't make a sound, right? And you can tell, well, of course it makes a sound. The sound waves when it hits it, but there's nobody there. So honestly, if it makes a sound or not, who freaking cares? And that's the whole point. And I see a lot of my mentees, especially women, that they find it hard to push out and let people know about their successes and contributions. On the opposite end, I see a lot of mediocre men portraying themselves as the last Coca-Cola in a desert. And I'm being straight here. And like, dude, really? I mean, I know you're full of yourself, but come on, man. And I see women that are so capable and they're afraid of putting that content out there, right? So you need to be your own hype person, right? Hype man, hype girl. And be sure that, look, you made something good happen. Send a quick email. Hey, boss, I want to let you know that I had this success. We're able to do these things. And just to make you aware, there's something that, you know, we can build upon. It could be as simple as that, right? We have some successes, or I share this. Look, there's something interesting that we did, right? And you have to do that. Nobody is going to advocate for you. The only person that advocates for you is yourself. That's just the fact of life. And if you think, well, they know, they see me work coming, being the first in and being the last out, they know I do all this work. I'm here to tell you, they don't know because they don't care. Because most people are self-centered and look among themselves, towards themselves, me included, because I'm a human being as well, right? So we all fail on that part. Nobody notices unless you make sure that people notice, right? I mean, do you think that's too far off the mark or what?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, the entire build your brand section, just don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to put yourself out there. I have been in the past, and I'll tell you, it's so much better now that I'm out doing things in the community and sharing and contributing, and just don't be afraid.
Yeah, and when don't be afraid, and a good way of not being afraid, you know what it is, Heather? It's being consistent about it, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to do a blog post, a 5-page blog post every day or every week, but right. You can comment, put comments on somebody's post every day. You can take at the end of the day, because that's the big issue. It's like, well, when am I going to do this? I'm busy. I got my home life. I got my work life. Look, take an hour, 30 minutes, an hour every day. Comment mm-hmm. or other people's posts. Repost things and add your thoughts to it, right? Be consistent on putting your content and your wins. Let people know about your wins as well. Look, I got a certificate on something. I passed this class. Celebrate with me. Put it on LinkedIn. Put it on different social media. Be consistent with your letting know people of your wins on a daily basis. When you make it a habit, it's not scary anymore. Things that are scary are things that are mostly unknown. But when you know that when you post, people comment or you add to it, you get a couple of likes and things like that, it's not scary anymore. Okay, because you're actually just contributing, you're participating, you're being a part of the community, right? And obviously, you have to enjoy what you do, right? And that's not a step, but it's something that's kind of the underpinning of it. If you don't like doing any of this, building your brand is going to be a waste of time. You got to enjoy the process. It's not so much, well, when I get a brand and I become X, you're missing the point, right? You got to enjoy the process. You got to, that brand is a daily thing that you enjoy because that's who you are. Just being you. And it will work. If you don't like what you do, if you don't like doing any of these things, it's not going to work for you. Look, at the end of the day, I want to tell to everybody is that, you know, we want to tell you that it's your turn now, right? Heather and myself, we have now this podcast as part of our brand because we enjoy it. We like to share our contributions and the contributions of other people, and that's great. But I want to see you now. I want to see you, listener, or watcher, viewer, have your own podcast or make your own articles or, you know, start on your social media, start doing your research, right? I want to see your values in action, right? The things that you believe, be informed by those and letting us know. Share those contributions, right? We're like-minded people. We like to share the road with you, and we're actually looking forward to seeing your brand and see what you can put out. So come on, let's do it. We're waiting.
I'm gonna have one less coworker tomorrow morning.
Oh really?
Yeah.
How come?
Read the comment.
No. You read it for all the folks that are listening. What does it say?
Would building a brand be like winning the Civilian of the Year award?
Oh, somebody won that? Who won that? Who won it?
Me.
Hey, how come I... When did you win this? Like last year? I didn't hear about it?
No, it was a few years ago, and they say it in my office constantly. Did you know that Heather got the Civilian of the Year award? They tell everybody that walks in the office. And Kevin Sailoff, who made the comment and didn't change his name to something else, is no longer going to be a coworker tomorrow.
Dude, you need to use a sock account. Come on, man. Yeah. you brought the heat to yourself. Like, sorry, I could do nothing for you on that one.
You get to work on time tomorrow to be at his desk.
No. I'm gonna say that somebody that has said against him that did it. It wasn't him. Okay.
Oh yeah.
It's somebody that wants to get at him. That's what happened. You need to do more investigation to confirm.
Oh, okay.
Dude, leave the state right now. look, I'm not surprised that you got it. Actually, it should be coming again shortly.
Oh, gee, thanks.
No, but again, I mean, folks, and we know we're a little bit over the hour, but I think this is important, especially and for all expertise levels, new people, older people, or ancient people like myself in this field. Build your brand. It's a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. We're going to keep going over the hour a little bit. So I just wanted to point out a recent LinkedIn post from Xtero. So FT creators of FTK. Let me share my screen because I have a picture. They are now supporting LevelDB files. So we talked about those last week, and I talked about a case that actually we were able to complete due to the LevelDB, the FCM files. Mm-hmm. Let me see if I can find the picture. Here we go.
Yeah.
All right. So this is what their LevelDB looks like in the new version of FTK. It's FTK 8, and they have a service pack that you install right over the FTK 8 that you already have installed. So you don't have to do a whole new install with the database and everything. You just install the service pack. And they included the parsing support for the Firebase Cloud Messaging is what FCM stands for, LevelDB files. So it gives you an additional chance to locate messages, notifications, account information, and a ton of other data that's stored in those files. Let me just put up their product here. So if you're an FTK user, install that service pack, check it out. Let me zoom in a little. And I think it's one of the best like viewers that I've seen for the LevelDBs, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's
really. I think they lay it out nice.
Oh yeah, and as folks are more familiar with this artifact, FCMs like Firebase Cloud Messaging, right? It could be anything, right? It could be whatever, right? So I really like the fact that vendors are taking the time to present key values that are come in the clear, or on also looking at specific fire, FCM artifacts and decoding them for you, because I believe they need to do that. I appreciate that FTK is leading with that effort because they listen to the community for that, and I honestly hope other vendors follow, because there's so much pertinent evidence in these LevelDB files, specifically in Android devices. At this point, I'm up to the dozens of cases that I mean, not including my own. Right, that I heard from people that reach out to me. I can only imagine how many more cases are being solved with FCM data that I don't hear about, right? Because not everybody calls me, hey, thanks for the leap, So I want you, listener, viewer, to benefit in your cases. So, it might be through FTK, it might be using the leaps. It will have to be by you learning the artifacts and going into those data stores and looking through those for those in your particular cases.
If you've ever tried to parse them yourself, though, and then report on them yourself, you will be very thankful for tools like this. Arsenal does the LevelDBs, Rabbit Hole does the LevelDBs, the Leaps you already mentioned, and now FTK is joining the party on those. So you will be very thankful for the tools when it comes to those files.
Oh, absolutely. And again, Rabbit Hole, one of my favorites, Arsenal as well. And again, I do like FTK because Now it's not only showing you the DoubleDB contents, it might be vendors, I hope again, start adding a little bit of more decoding, extra levels of decoding that might be needed for that FCM content. Now, if it's not there, I don't believe it's there yet across the board, and that's fine, but that's why we get paid the big bucks. That's why you get paid the bucks. if you're in government work, the word big doesn't go there, but you know what I mean.
Right. Let me remove that here. So, what's new with the leaps? A lot.
Oh my goodness! It's so much that I have to remind myself how much. Right. So again, hopefully Johan is still around. It's super late up in Europe where he's at. But if he's around, again, Johan, I want to thank you for your work. With the leaps, what Johan has done is, and let's show the next slide. First of all, he took all the code base and he made binaries, executables, but for Macs. And this is great because the only way you could run the tooling. Oh, Johan is here. Okay, good, good. Yeah, awesome. It's good that you're here, man. We the community, we appreciate this. Now you can run the tooling as a binary on a Mac operating system, not only on Intel-based Macs, but also on silicon-based Macs. I have a I think it's M2, M3 here that I'm using to, even screencast right now. And it works great, right? It's really fast. It's really nice. If you're using a like environment, which is a Mac, to deal with a like device, which is an iOS. And it's all compiled as binary. You don't have to really use Python or learn Python to be able to run the tools in that environment anymore, which is an amazing improvement. Second of all, Johan took the screens and he changed them. So I put here on the upper left the old version of how Alib used to look, right? You had on the left the artifacts and then a tinier kind of screen there for the log as it's going through. So Johan took we were discussing and talking about it, and even from his own perception, he took and he eliminated the log window from the artifacts, because when you hit process, and I think I have the other slide there, the whole screen turns into a big log. And I really, really like that. I said in the last episode, if there's any issues there, they're going to jump at you immediately, right? Any problems, they're going to be there. And you can review that log up and down before you open the report. Of course, this log is also contained within the report. But I want you to be aware of where an issue might be so that you can go dig deeper if it's relevant to your case, right? And the previous screen, like Heather was showing, Johan took and made binaries for all the leaps and took all the leaps and change that interface. Another benefit of the interface change is that it's pure Python code, so we don't have to use libraries that want to charge you or get your money. It's all pure Python for the community, and that is an amazing job. The community and me personally, I'm really grateful, Johan, for the work. And he's still cranking it out. I see all his pull requests coming in and making the tool better pretty much on a daily basis. So we're super grateful for those changes. I didn't mention this. For folks that don't know, the leaps are composed for a tool for iOS parsing, Android parsing, returns. That's what you get. You send a search warrant to Google, Apple, or Kik, or Snapchat, whatever you get back, the tool will parse it for you and show you in a nice report, okay? Or Google Takeout or stuff like that. That's the RLeap. And then VLeap, which is for vehicles. The VLeap one, what I have down the pike is after IASIS during the summer, my plan is to really focus on VLeap artifacts from end of July all the way to January and maybe the beginning of next year to really beef up that capability. I believe there's a big hole in that sense, not because there's no vendors. There's vendors. There's a main vendor for all the car things. But I think an open source community-driven tool will really help, with reporting, right? And hopefully motivate vendors in the space to up their game to what the specs that we need. Again, hopefully that makes sense. I don't want to offend anybody.
I don't think you did.
Okay, good. So I want to be that healthy competition in a sense. Also as a validation tool, because right now, if Axiom parses and Cellebrite parse, I think Cellebrite, don't quote me on it, but some tools do parse products from vehicle folks that do dumps and process vehicles, but it's not a validation of that process. They're just showing you their output within their tool. And that's different from me parsing it myself differently or separately from you. Mm-hmm. Let me see if I can, does that make sense, Heather?
Yeah, it does. X or Y does too. We'll ingest those. But yes, it makes complete sense.
Yeah, but it's not like X or Y goes to the image and pulls the stuff out itself, right?
No, they ingest the file, right?
That's what I'm talking about, right? So they take that out, the product of the processing from tool Y or tool B, and they put it in. Nothing wrong with that. But I want us to be another way of looking at that data with independent processes, right? We do our own parsing of the data so you can do that comparison, do that validation, see if you're missing something or not, right? Or indicate where you need to do some manual analysis. Kevin is saying, what is Kevin saying?
We need vehicle test data. I've got a bunch for you, Kevin. not related to work, by the way.
Yeah, not case related. Yeah, and we talk about two episodes back how hard it is to get these images, right?
Yeah.
I'm lucky that I came across a whole bunch of people I asked, and people were kind enough to share some of those with me. Some are like Heather says, some are not case related. Some are case related, right? So some of those, you know, I can work on them. I cannot share them, right? But yeah, it will be just like that. We will be working. Geraldine Bly, she's awesome. We'll mention her again in half a second. She's also gonna be helping with that effort. She's a really good expert with cars. I depend on her all the time on her expertise, both in working the cars and in, you know, teaching me about it. So I really appreciate that. I think we have a question in the chat, Heather. Can you see it there?
Yeah, sorry, I kicked my cord and my battery was about to die. I saved it.
Okay, good.
So if I disappear, it's because, oops.
don't leave me alone.
Are you able to do an install video for the Leaps for M1 Max?
I guess we can. Right now, with the videos that we have on how to install it, they're done by Hexordia. And they work great. I mean, it's true, it's for Windows, but I think they are... it works just the same. Like, I haven't had an issue installing it. The requirements seems well, but again, you know, Ed, I'll try to get a clean Mac and run it again, see if there's anything particular that's different. And if so, then I'll come back on the show and some other means and let people know. So that should be fine. Mary's saying, what's Mary saying?
I'll start dumping my rentals. All right, Mary, start doing it.
Like I said last time, make sure you can put that dashboard back on.
Yeah, don't ruin the rental. That's going to be a really expensive set of test data.
I don't think our bosses are going to pay for it. Just saying. Johan is making a good comment here. Can you share that? So I'm gonna read it. Johan says, since we remove magic, there's no issue anymore. And what that means, it doesn't mean that we have actual magic in it. what that means is that was one library that we used to identify different file types called magic, and it was having some issues with some of the Mac installations in that are silicon based. And thank you for the comment, Johan, because obviously Johan flagged that and he proposed a solution and we did it. And we took his solution and that took care of it. Thanks for the reminder, because I totally slipped my mind. But yeah, that shouldn't be an issue. That library is not used. We use another library that's more general. I say general, but not distributions, other platforms can use it and it solved that problem. So you should be able to install it with no issues. Awesome. So we have another thing that's new in the Leaps. I really want to highlight this out. So when you do a takeout archive, and for those people that don't know, if you have a Google account, you can ask Google to give you all your data. And all your data will include location history, your search history, your pictures, everything, right? You can get that. It comes in different formats, JSON, HTML, comes compressed in a zip. The cool thing is that the folks from Metadata Forensics have made a parser for RLEAP that will take the location history settings and make them really viewable for you, which has a lot of cool information about the different devices that are kind of attached to the account that you took the Google takeout from. And I want to flag it because, you know, Metadata Forensics It's a really, you know, now well-known company in the space providing digital forensic services. And I'm really happy to see not only individuals, but seeing organizations really valuing the effort of the open source tool community and also themselves participating. So I want to thank Metadata Forensics for putting that content for the community. And again, if you're not familiar with Takeout B, you might be like, well, that's something that the user has to pull. I don't, you know, yeah, that's true. But I had cases where I got a cooperating witness. Yes. That can give me a Google takeout that will break open the case.
Yes, definitely.
So don't dismiss any data source. All data sources are good. All right. So
we've had a case before where the user of the phone had actually brought his own Google takeout down into his phone to use this script in the leaps to parse it. Right from the actual evidence item, right? Oh, sometimes people request their own takeouts and save it right on the evidence. Just saying.
Oh, wow. That's really wild. It's like I have an extraction +++.
Yes.
Thanks for the extraction and the search warrant request. I mean, how you had to do it. You put it down for me. Thank you.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh.
Wow, I like that story. I'm gonna use it. Yeah. I'm gonna use it from now on.
It's good.
Again, never. A forensic device that you're analyzing is like a box of chocolates, Heather. You know what comes next? The phrase.
You never know what you're gonna get.
Okay, good. Oh, thank goodness.
You know that movie. One. I know okay. That one.
Okay, good. Oof, okay. If you hadn't, I would have been really troubled. Okay. Good. Yeah. Look, we have a running joke here because Heather doesn't watch too many movies, but that's another story for another day. Okay, we got another cool report, the Media Service Information Report. This is one for the VLEAP, for the vehicles. This was done by Heather Geraldine, and it's pretty neat. So you need to go check it out. Thanks to her, we can get that information from cars. And again, over the summer, I mean, after the summer, we're going to be working hard on adding support to the vehicles and really be an important tool within the sphere for those things. So I think that's it we have for the VLEAPs, right?
Yes.
I mean, for the LEAPs in general. Yep.
It is. So we're to everybody's favorite part after we've kept you for 21 minutes longer.
Well, we're sorry, folks. Sorry. But you know what? This is our brand, so we like it. So hopefully you do too. What do we have next?
So the meme of the week is our last. Let me get it up here.
And always the meme of the week really brings out some fireworks. Let me bring out my fireworks. Hold on. Oh, I brought the lasers. I always bring the laser beams. Oh, that's confetti. No. There we go. Fireworks. Okay.
So the meme of the week this week says, when they bring the phone in a Faraday bag, but the cable cord is running outside connected to power. So I am sure that everybody that's still here listening has seen this before. Thank you for possibly creating an antenna for the device to connect to a network. I appreciate the effort of putting it in the Faraday bag, but do better.
The antenna is so good that it not only connects to the cell towers, now it's connecting to Starlink.
Yeah.
To the satellites in space. Thank you very much. I pick the meme template is, you know, this poor guy with his trying to smile, but his eyes are red and he's like about to cry.
Yeah. Oh, he's definitely about to cry.
Yeah. While he's still trying to smile. Yeah, that's me. That's me. And look, folks, that's why I talk about putting that content and being part of the community. Folks were putting all these stories in LinkedIn about different, like, well, like the guy that, or the folks that put the telephone in a used potato chip bag.
Yes. Oh, I saw that one. What?
So, look, the potato chip bag is not going to work, but nope. Really, you couldn't at least clean it. So now you're giving me a phone that's compromised and dirty.
Yeah.
Or more dirty than they usually are, right?
Right, exactly. Maybe the potato chips made it cleaner, actually.
Yeah, it's like a scrub. Agent Brignoni, why are those potato chips on the phone? It looks like it's consistent with it. I don't know. It wasn't me. No, and there's a whole bunch of stories of folks, you know, the folks that, you know, they leave the phone out And before they give it to you, you snuck it into the Faraday bag.
Yes.
You think I'm not going to notice when I look at this phone that you put in the Faraday bag at the last second?
Right. Or a little bit different topic, kind of, not really, but they bring it to you and it's AFU, but it's not because they turned it on their ride over. But I got it powered on.
Of course it's on. You can't see it? Okay. Oh, look, if you're not in this field and you're trying to be slick about it, don't. Just don't. Mm-hmm. Just try to do the best you can with what we told you. And if not, don't mess with it, right?
Yep. Admit your mistake.
Exactly. Grow from it, like we were saying. Anyways, I think that's it for the show. I think it's the longest show we had so far.
It is. It definitely is.
Yeah, but I enjoyed it. Hopefully you did as well.
Absolutely. Every time.
All right. Any last words for the good of the order, Heather?
That's it. Thank you so much for everybody who came and joined.
Thank you, everybody. We're going to be back again, not this Thursday that coming up, but the one over that, with some topics, some news. Again, thank you, everybody. And hopefully we'll go back to the 1 hour standard.
Yeah, we will.
Awesome. And with that, we all bid you adieu. See you later.
Night. Thank you.
Good night. Bye.